The title, I know, risks raising eyebrows. But my Yale History Department colleague Timothy Snyder has preceded me on tyranny, as has more distantly Seneca on the shortness of life. I'm most worried, though, about the admirers of Karl von Clausewitz, being one myself. His posthumously published On War in 1832 set the standard for all subsequent writing on that subject and its necessary corollary, grand strategy. My justification for yet another book is concision, not one of Clausewitz's strengths. On Grand Strategy covers more years than On War, but at less than half the length. It grows out of two experiences with grand strategy separated by a quarter of a century. The first was teaching strategy and policy at the U.S. Naval War College from 75 to 77. The second has been co-teaching Yale University's Studies in Grand Strategy seminar every year from 2002 to the present. Both courses have always relied more on classical texts and historical case studies than on theory. Both courses are collaboratively taught, normally one civilian and one military instructor for each section. Together, all of these colleagues have taught me a lot. Another reason I feel obliged now to try to say what I've learned. I've done so in a way that's informal, impressionistic, and wholly idiosyncratic. My teachers bear no responsibility other than for setting me off on paths they couldn't control. Because I seek patterns across time, space, and scale, I felt free to suspend such constraints for comparative, even conversational purposes. St. Augustine and Machiavelli will occasionally talk with one another, as will Clausewitz and Tolstoy, who in turn, the imaginer I found most helpful others include Virgil, Shakespeare, and F. Scott Fitzgerald. Finally, I've returned often to the ideas of Sir Isaiah Berlin, whom I got to know slightly while visiting the University of Oxford in 92-93. I hope he'd be pleased to be considered a grand strategist. I know he'd be amused. That's from the preface of On Grand Strategy by John Lewis Gaddis, winner of the Pulitzer Prize, and a book that first appeared to my attention in a weekly blog produced by NPR, National Public Radio, called NPR Books. They recommended this one a few months ago, and I thought, hey, let's give it a try. Glad I did. Grand strategy, it's an idea, a conceptual way of looking at the world, and a conflict in particular, that is perhaps as old as humankind. Certainly our author begins his discourse with a look at the ancient Greek conflict between the all-powerful king of Persia, Xerxes, and the backwater Greeks of Sparta, Athens, and other Greek island nations, drawing upon the known and the often surmised history of one of the world's greatest conflicts, the invasion of Europe by Asia, Gaddis draws our attention to the now famous distinction between the fox and the hedgehog, attributed in its modern version to the aforementioned British philosopher Isaiah Berlin. To help us understand why the seemingly overwhelming power of the Persian king came to naught when it washed up against the much more divided Greek shore, and so the Asian invasion of Europe was halted in its first historic iteration. Here's a little bit of how he paints that picture in Grand Strategy. The King Xerxes' invasion of Greece was an early but spectacular example of hedgehog-like behavior. Being king of kings was a very big thing. If Xerxes could gather together the greatest military force ever while turning water into land at the Hellespont and land into water on the Athos Peninsula, then what couldn't he do? Why not, after conquering Greece, all of Europe? Why not, he even asked himself at one point, a Persian empire that has the same limit as Zeus's sky. But Xerxes failed, as is the habit of hedgehogs, to establish a proper relationship between his ends and his means. Because ends exist only in the imagination, they can be infinite. A throne on the moon, perhaps, with a great view. Means, though, are stubbornly finite. They're boots on the ground, ships in the sea, and the bodies required to fill them. Ends and means have to connect if anything is to happen. They're never, however, interchangeable. Well, we continue on to read about the grand strategies spun by the maritime-oriented Athenians, the landlocked Spartans, And, of course, our story of the ebb and the flow of grand strategy does not end with the ancient Greeks. The crafty and multifaceted fox will continue to outwit, in the end, the single-focused, if mighty, drive of the often powerful hedgehog. And so we move through Western history as our author takes us by the hand and leads us into a comparison of the Chinese warrior, so not all Western, genius Sun Tzu, and the ruler who set the foundation for the long-running ancient Roman Empire, Caesar Augustus. Concluding that discussion with this, quote, "It's all the more interesting that Caesar Augustus understood so much of Sun Tzu while knowing nothing of him. The explanation may lie in a logic of strategy that undergirds cultures, much as grammar does languages, over vast stretches of time, space, scale. If so, common sense, when confronting uncommon circumstances, may itself be another of the contradictions held simultaneously in the minds of first-rate intelligences. For the practice of principles must precede their derivation, articulation, and institutionalization. You may be looking at the clouds, but you'll need to have both feet firmly planted on the ground." Introducing us to George Kennan, the father of the famed George F. Kennan of Cold War fame, we learn of 4th century Augustine, some know him as St. Augustine, and his fateful intertwining of the then declining Roman Empire's genius for governing bureaucracy with the newly successful Christian religion, which was then refined by the still opaque observations and ideas propounded by the Renaissance political philosopher that we know as Machiavelli. And so it goes, as we move from one era to another, through 10 different yet intersecting chapters. These characters do sometimes not necessarily speak to each other, but speak through each other through the wording of Gaddis, studying the ever-changing sense of grand strategy that has been developed by humankind. The great German thinker on the subordination of war to political theory, Clausewitz, the great Russian novelist who grappled with God and man, Tolstoy, United States presidents John Quincy Adams, Abraham Lincoln, Woodrow Wilson, FDR, Great Britain's Winston Churchill. The roll call and the grand strategic thinking rolls forward through history as the pages unfold. And make no mistake, this is a classic great men of history type of book. It's almost all Western thought and seemingly not much interested in women's grand thoughts and strategies, albeit we do receive a chapter that delves into the pivotal, and we are to see Foxy that read, and as we are to see Foxy read Crafty, reign of Queen Elizabeth of England, who is juxtaposed with that of her arch-antagonist, the hedgehog-like Spanish monarch Philip. Though they come from different places in their personality and their ways of thinking, interestingly, both of their work ultimately resulted in the foundation of European empires in the new and indeed the old worlds, albeit empires that in the case of Elizabeth long outlasted her own personal reign and resulted ultimately in the birth of, yes, the United States of America. That said and noted, this is a read worth having, if only knowing that it will present only a corner of the grand strategies humankind have developed over the millennia. For Gaddis does give us a grand review of the importance of studying what are now often referred to as the writers of the great books. As a reviewer from the New York Times tells us in his review of Gaddis's book, quote, "Gaddis believes the best way to hone strategic thinking is not just by mastering the advice of Machiavelli or Clausewitz, both of whom figure prominently in the class, much less contemporary high-tech wizardry, but also by understanding the interplay of history, literature, and philosophy over some 2,500 years of Western civilization, with occasional insights from Sun Tzu and other non-Western thinkers. In some sense, on grand strategy is a traditional argument for the value of classical education in the broadest sense," end quote. Well stated. Let's finish with the author's own words as he indeed concludes his not-so-insignificant large tome, his book. He notes, I guess not so much criticizes, that Clausewitz, one of his favorite authors, could not match him in terms of concision, although this author, Mr. John Lewis Gaddis, does take some 313 pages to make his statement. All that said, here's how he wraps up. In All Fair Dealings, the great English philosopher and politician Burke reminded his parliamentary colleagues in 1775, the thing bought must bear some proportion to the purchase paid. Proportionality comes from what grand strategy is, the alignment of potentially infinite aspirations with necessarily limited capabilities. And fairness? I'd say from bending the alignment toward freedom, or as Isaiah Berlin would have put it, toward negative liberty. This is what Clausewitz meant by subordinating war to policy, for what freedom could have come from total violence. It's what Augustine sought by seeking to make wars just. And it's what Sun Tzu, with uncharacteristic gentleness, acknowledged that, quote, while an angered man may again be happy, and a resentful man may again be pleased, a state that is perished cannot be restored, nor can the dead be brought back to life, end quote. The contradiction between the living and the dead is the greatest we'll ever hold, in mind or in spirit, whatever the present within which we function. All at either end of that tightrope, well, almost all, deserve respect. On grand strategy, it's quite an interesting look at human personality and how great men and a few women have fought to make their cultures dominant over the many millennia covered. By John Lewis Gaddis. It's available at all of our fine local libraries. Once again, thanks to NPR for suggesting this on their book blog. And certainly, you can catch it at the West Lafayette Public Library.